This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
And because it's Thursday, got my guy Bernie Miklas with me, Chris Ranji, on the Gas House Gang until 1 o'clock today. And we want you to check in with us. You got the phone number to call and text, 314-436-7900. You can watch on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. If you find the at KMOX Sports Twitter page, we are there. And we're here with you for the next hour. We're going to talk to Tyler Koeppner, who covers baseball for The Athletic. We are also going to talk, and that's coming up at 12:15. At 12:30, we are going to talk to former Cardinals pitcher Jim Cott. That is all coming up. And Bernie, we are well into it. We're well into the Cardinals offseason. Derek Gould today just writing about Brendan Donovan and that there is some interest in him. And you just wonder how quickly things are going to change. We know they're going to be different going into 2026, but when might we actually start to see some real moves happening as the GM meetings were going on this week?
I think generally speaking, you can start to look forward to some trades after Thanksgiving. And I think teams like to get things done before Christmas, but that doesn't mean they will. The schedule has sort of been shifting to later and later period of the off season. But I think there's going to be a lot of interest. There is a lot of interest in Brendan Donovan. Derek Gould's piece talked about Kansas City and Cleveland being two teams that have expressed a lot of interest, but there's going to be more teams than that. So, Heim Bloom, you know, if Heim Bloom gets something that he feels really good about, I'm sure he'll press the trigger on it, but I don't know when that'll be.
Yeah. And I don't know just how I'm still fluctuating, at least in my mind, of how different I think the roster is going to look next year. I think the rotation is going to be at least 40% different, probably. I mean, you're going to have to fill at least two rotation spots with guys different than what you've seen in the past. I think it's potentially three. I think Michael McGreevy is in. Very likely the Matthew Liberatore is in. And then maybe Kyle Leahy. I'm not exactly sure. But you're going to look at a very different rotation for next year. And of course, you've got guys on the roster. You know, we might be looking at three of them who are gone for 2026.
I think, listen, I would be shocked if Heim Bloom didn't land certainly one starter, as long as it's a good starter that's got talent and it's controllable contract and all that stuff. But I would even expect him to try to add a depth piece, like a back of the rotation guy too. I think he'll aim high on one of the starting pitchers he's going to pursue. He'll aim higher, and then the other one will be just kind of like, okay, we need some depth and some back-end help. And they do have some young guys that are getting closer to the majors. I don't know what the timetable will be there, but I think they certainly need a couple of arms for their rotation going into spring training. And I actually think Kyle Leahy is an excellent candidate. That doesn't mean that he's guaranteed a spot, but I think he's got the stuff that it takes to be in a major league rotation. He really does.
You know, Bernie, this is, again, it's not going to be the same kind of season as 2025. Not exactly the same, but there are going to be a lot of similarities where I think part of the year or a part of the roster will be used on guys you're just trying to figure out what you have or what they're capable of doing, and he would be one of those. That's somebody that maybe you just want to see. Can he definitely start at the major league level and do that regularly? And maybe it benefits them long term to find out and use 2026 for that.
Exactly. They need, in fact, I would be flabbergasted if they don't give Kyle Leahy a great opportunity to be in that rotation. Let me just give you a couple quick things, and I promise I'll be quick. Last season, in terms of a metric called, you know, pitching run value, Kyle Leahy was like a plus 13, which is pretty high for a reliever, really high for a reliever. And the other thing, that's number one. The other thing is that last season when he had 20 relief appearances where he pitched at least two innings, sometimes three. That's not a five-inning start, but you're close. You're getting closer to it. You know what his ERA was last year when this last season when he went two-plus innings in a relief outing? 1.01.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that he throws five pitches, and StatCast rates all five pitches above average. And see, starters, that's what you want. You want a guy with a pitch arsenal, a lot of ways to get guys out. So he's got the prerequisite qualifications, I think is the best way to put it. So I don't see why they wouldn't want to give that opportunity to one of their own internally developed guys who obviously is a really good pitcher.
And if you're looking, I mean, you're talking about starting pitching repertoire for a guy. You're looking for three good pitches. I mean, if you've got five that you can use and feel confident in them, that's really good. Most guys don't have five quality pitches in their arsenal.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, and I did so much research on Leahy. If people are interested in this, I wrote about it a couple days ago. If you go to stlsportscentral.com, you'll see all the stuff that I put together about Kyle Leahy and why I think he warrants a chance to be a starting pitcher in the rotation and why I think it'll work. Because I wouldn't be saying that unless I had some stuff to kind of back it up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Bernie Miklas with us, with you until 1 o'clock. We will talk to Jim Cott, former Cards pitcher. That will be at 12:30. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Tyler Kepner, who covers Major League Baseball for The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on this offseason that is happening right now, maybe some of the awards that have been issued. We got the National League Rookies of the Year the Cy Youngs. Yesterday. So we'll talk about that as well. All that coming up on the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. It is the baseball offseason right now. Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji are talking about it here on Gas House Gang. Jim Cott's going to join the show just after 12:30. But right now we go to the guest line and we welcome in Tyler Kepner, senior MLB writer for The Athletic, who is with us now on KMOX. Tyler, good to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing okay. Anything fun happening at the general manager meetings in Vegas?
Oh, I'm not there. So.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. The whole postseason, so I take a little bit of time to separate after that. But it was a lot of reporters, a lot of GMs out there trying to figure out what's going on here.
Tyler, Bernie Miklas, really good to talk to you again, my friend. Good, and as always, great work in The Athletic. Hey, I wanted to ask you. I'm sure we'll deal with some of the speculation about trades and stuff. But I the big news story of the week was the indictments of the two Cleveland Guardians pitchers and. It's amazing to me that they sacrifice so much for such short gain in terms of money. What do you think is going to happen? But also, what do you think baseball wants to do to maybe take measures to prevent this from happening again?
Well, I think eventually they'll be banned from baseball. If they get cleared in court somehow. I mean, we saw 100 years ago the Black Sox were cleared in court and it didn't matter. They were all banned for life. I mean, can you see these guys ever throwing a pitch again in Major League Baseball? I can't. Based on what the government laid out and what, you know, when you match it up to the video, it's pretty damning. And baseball took the opportunity the other day to say that they and the gambling companies were banning they weren't banning prop bets, but they were, you know, capping it at like $200 or something like that. And so I guess that helps. I mean, it would have been better if you just banned prop bets, so you wouldn't be able to bet on a single pitch or something that's so easy to manipulate. But certainly nobody will be making hundreds of thousands of dollars off that anymore. And I guess that'll help.
With full disclosure, I have a partnership with FanDuel, and sports betting and prop betting is something that I actually enjoy doing, and I know a lot of sports fans do it. And there is also a lot of money in it for not just the companies, the betting companies, but for the teams themselves because of the partnerships they have with those companies. So I can't really ever see it completely going away. Can you?
No, and The Athletic has has a partnership too with one of them. Once it became legal again, you know, and that expired, and I remember talking to Faye Vincent before he died last year, and you know, he was talking about what a shame it was that sports gambling had become legal again, and how it was really just the result of a loophole in the original wording of the law. But now it's here, and it's been here for a few years, and I don't think it's going anywhere when it brings so much money to the companies and to teams and leagues. It would take some sort of federal legislation again to outlaw it, and I don't know if that's coming. So, yeah, it's probably here to stay, at least for the foreseeable future, and we've got to get a handle on it. We've already seen some issues in basketball and baseball, and I'm sure they'll continue to some degree. I mean, these guys are human, and whether or not they make a lot of money, there's if you are inclined to scheme and want a little more action and have maybe have friends who want you to do stuff for them, and you know it's still going to be a temptation.
Tyler, I wanted to ask you about, just to get your view of the Cardinals and the state that they're in, you know, with Chaim Bloom taking over. It's going to be a rebuild, not a drastic rebuild, maybe more moderate than anything, but big changes. Number one, are you surprised that the Cardinals sort of allowed themselves to get into the position where they have to do this after so much winning? And number two, what is your opinion of Chaim Bloom, everything you know about him? Do you think he's a good fit for this particular challenge?
Yeah, I like Chaim a lot personally. He's a really he's a man of real integrity, a really good person and steward of a franchise. He's very smart. I think his track record of building a farm system and a setup that will, you know, make smart decisions in drafting and development is pretty extensive. So, you know, with time, I think you'll see some results of that. I think the Red Sox now are seeing some benefit of the guys who came into the organization while he was there. And, you know, certainly the Rays have that feel as well. But, you know, he has to show that he can do it in a market like St. Louis, where it's sort of somewhere between Tampa and Boston, or maybe more like the Boston that he was with when they weren't really spending huge dollars, like Boston is used to doing. It's a tricky setup there in St. Louis, right? Because they're a middle market team, I guess, but they are used to have such a great tradition, and they're such a Tiffany brand in MLB, and they're used to contending, you know, in this era. They're used to pennants and being the top dog, and now they're not. And they need to somehow find not just the kinds of prospects who become big leaguers and sort of good complementary around the margins guys, but they need to find dudes. You know, they don't have those high impact superstars that fueled a lot of those winning teams. I mean, they don't, you know, they don't have the Pujols, Roland, Edmonds kind of guys, Walker, you know, that they had a little while ago. And they've got to find those high impact guys. And, you know, that until they do, they're kind of going to be in this middle ground.
That's in terms of winning a championship for sure. What about just competing? And I mean, really competing within the division with teams like the Brewers, who are able to do it year in, year out, even when you think they're not going to, or the Reds, who are getting better. And then you've got the Cubs, who've got stars on their team and they have resources, but they seem reluctant to really push it. You know, they had an opportunity, I thought, to really go hard during last offseason. They punted on that. So knowing what the landscape's like, and then the Pirates are the Pirates, but knowing what it's like, I mean, what is the real likelihood the Cardinals could actually compete fairly soon just within the division?
Well, that's the thing, right? It always seems like the Central is winnable and attainable, and yet the Brewers, you know, if they weren't like the Milwaukee Brewers and didn't have like a low payroll and everything, you know, people would people might see them as an imposing force because of what they've done and what they do almost every year. So they've got a formula there, and they've got a system that works and that they believe in. And it's hard to replicate that. It takes a lot of discipline and a lot of years of buy-in from people. So, you know, I don't know. I think the question for the Cardinals is, are they just going to try to change some things around and win 89 games or whatever it's going to take and then win the division? Or are they going to try to, you know, take some maybe short-term pain for a long-term sustainable benefit? I think that's what they're thinking with High and Bloom and with the fact that they didn't do anything at all last year in the offseason. So they're laying the foundation for something. It seems like those days of just kind of trying to get enough to win the Central and maybe get lucky in the postseason are gone. And ultimately, it'll probably be a good thing. But in the meantime, it's going to be a little boring. And I think the fans have shown that they're not really that excited or enthused about it, which we're not used to seeing in St. Louis. We're used to seeing continued support.
It's the rebuilding thing is a pretty foreign experience, right? So I think everyone's trying to adjust to it. Anyway, Tyler Kepner with us from The Athletic. I hate to bring up this topic because it's such a downer, but I did miss – you've been around this game a long time. You have a good read on the powers that be. Do you have any optimism that a work stoppage, a loss of games can be avoided in terms of the looming labor dispute between the owners and the players?
I do. I mean, I try to be optimistic until there's real reason not to be. I can't see a scenario like I always think of St. Louis when I think of like labor peace, because one of those World Series years, they just announced that they're having a new CBA, like in October. It was like no big deal. The sort of the most peaceful time and I can remember. And now it's back to the way it was in the 70s and 80s and 90s, where everything goes to the last minute and there's brinksmanship and there's, you know, at least now if we're talking a lockout, we're talking an off-season lockout, which they were able to get through, as tedious as it was a few years ago. They did get through that without losing any games. I think there's powerful incentive not to lose games. And the incentive is that the TV model has broken down. And they need content to sell their product. I mean, it sounds basic, but like, how are you going to make money in a new TV paradigm if you can't even promise that you're going to have a season or that you're going to have games to show? So I think they need to keep the product going in order to sell it. And I also think Manfred is very proud of the fact that he's never lost any games on his watch. And I don't think he wants to have that be sort of the final mark on his legacy. So, and also one other point to consider is that the thing that ended the lockout the last time is that the rank and file players accepted the deal. The really rich guys, the veteran guys, the guys who were on the executive committee, they wanted to continue it. They wanted to keep pushing for things and they didn't want to accept, but the rank and file accepted. So if you can appeal to the rank and file and make this about the well-being of the players as a whole and not just the ability for Juan Soto to make $765 million, then you got a good chance. So I'm not pessimistic just yet. There's a lot of hard issues and a lot of tough talk, but ever since, except going back to that St. Louis agreement, there's always hard issues and tough talk, and they haven't missed it in 31 years. Well, so I'm going to hang to that.
Yeah, and one of the reasons they give for wanting that salary cap is teams like the Yankees, you know, you can't really compete with them, and they're just going to get the good players, the Dodgers, same thing. And there was the report that Paul Skeens is telling teammates he wants to play for New York. He denies that. So what can they do about it? And is a cap the solution for it?
No, I don't think so. I don't. I think you need to distribute more money to among the teams, and I think you need to earmark that money for for players to get them to trust that it won't just be put back in the owner's pockets. So there needs to be some kind of structure there, but I don't think there needs to be a formal salary cap. I think if you look and study it, there's more different champions in baseball than there are in other sports. Every year there's a World Series team that hasn't been there in at least 10 years. I mean, literally every year, except for 2018, you go back to, ever since the Cardinals and Giants were making it all the time, you know, the last 9 or 10 years, there's always some team that hasn't been there in a while. You know, you mentioned the Yankees, and in the New York area, you know, yeah, sure, the Yankees always are good, and they can steal your best player. But what have they done in October? They've made one World Series in the last 16 years, and they fell flat against the Dodgers. So it doesn't assure you of anything. The Yankees have as many pennants and as many World Series wins in the last 16 years as the Arizona Diamondbacks. So, you know, I don't think it's an excuse. I think if the Pirates want to get better, they should sell the team to an owner who wants to play at the high rollers table. Not enough owners, you know, some owners just don't want to do that. They don't want to ante up for what it takes to be in the game. And there's plenty of billionaires out there, I think, who would. Sell the team. Sell the team if you don't want to spend. You know, you'll make a lot of money, and someone else, and you won't be a villain in town. I don't know why they don't sell.
And I could not agree with you more. And every single one of these owners in every single major sport would make money on their investment right now if they sold. Every single one of them. So
right, right. Yeah. So why would you want to be, you know, why would you want to be a pariah? I mean, not everybody can be the Dodgers. There has to be somebody who's a top dog. But look at, like, the Royals. Again, like, you know, they're not a powerhouse, but they try, you know, and they spend what they go out and they get guys, and they try to be competitive. And, you know, they've had a couple good years here lately. They won the World Series 10 years ago. They keep their stars, or they keep some of their stars, Alex Gordon, Sal Perez. I mean, they try. And it just seems like some teams don't try. And I think that's a model that can work.
Senior MLB writer for The Athletic, Tyler Kepner, we appreciate you. Thanks for jumping on today.
All right, fellas, enjoy your conversation with Jim Cott. He's the best.
We love Jim Cott. He's awesome. And that is coming up next. That's Tyler Kepner, the Gas House Gang. And Bernie's appearance is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. It is the Gas House Gang. Jim Cott, the Hall of Famer, is next on KMOX. Gas House Gang brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji. And our next guest was inducted into baseball's Hall of Fame in 2022. The left-hander started his career, major league career, back in 1959. Finished it here in St. Louis with the Cardinals in the early 80s. The Hall of Famer Jim Cott is on the show with us this afternoon. Good to talk to you, Jim. How you doing?
Thank you. Good talking with you guys. Always good to talk baseball in St. Louis.
Well, Jim, Bernie Miklas, really great to talk to you again. It's been too long. Sir, I can't believe you're 87, not because I think that's an abnormally old age. It's because you're so incredibly youthful and vibrant and just on top of your game, so to speak. Do you have a secret? Are you going to write a book about how to be an 87-year-old guy going on, say, maybe 47?
I'll give you one better than that. I had a humbling honor few nights ago to go into the New York State Baseball Hall of Fame, and Bob Costas was one of my presenters, but the other one was my playing manager in 1958, Jack McKeon. And Jack is about to be 95, and he was sharp as Johnny Carson in his prime. I mean, he is unbelievable. Wow. So that was so cool, having the pitcher and catcher from 67 years ago talking about stories in the old Pioneer League. But yeah, I feel very blessed to have the health I have, and I think playing into my 40s and playing in St. Louis with guys like Dave LaPointe and Willie McGee that were almost young enough to be my sons, I think that helped keep me young.
Yeah, and you played for some pretty good teams. You know, you had a championship here in St. Louis. What was, for you, a long career, as we talked about, starting in the late 50s and ending in the early 80s, what was maybe the highlight for you? Was it being inducted into the Hall of Fame, or was it something
no,
else?
That's a very humbling honor, but there's no question that the most rewarding and exciting year I had in baseball was being with the 82 Cardinals. I mean, you know, that was ended up being a record, not a record of achievement. Just coincidentally, I waited longer than any player in professional team sports to finally get a championship ring, and that was 24 years. I played golf this past summer with Ray Bourque. He waited 22 years for the Stanley Cup. So to finish my career really with that full season with those guys, and we still stay each other in touch with through text, so that was so much fun. 67 home runs we hit as a team, stole 200 bases. We all said, bring on the 2025 Dodgers. I think we'd love to be able to play those guys.
Jim, before Whitey Herzog and the Cardinals signed you, what did they say? Like, what were the qualities they thought you would bring to that bullpen? And also, please talk about how you were used, because, of course, for a while now, we live in this age of specialization. It's got to be lefty versus lefty and all that stuff. Did Whitey use you against every type of hitter, or did he try to go lefty versus lefty?
Well, you know, I'll back it up. The way that the Cardinals picked me up was John Claiborne called me. I was on the DFA list from the Yankees, and I think I had one more day to go, the 10-day period, before I was completely free. But I was, 41 years old, so there's not going to be a lot of clubs knocking on my door. But he said, can you be in St. Louis by 12:30 tomorrow? We've got a businessman special. We just picked up your contract. And I said, yeah, I can be there. So I get there. The game's already started. And who's walking out of the clubhouse but Darryl Knowles? And Knowles, he said, you're taking my place and you're older than I am. So that's when Kenny Boyer was still there. And I came in and made a few relief appearances, and then actually I started quite a few games in 1980, and my desire was to continue starting. But when Whitey took over, he said, I want you to be my lefty-lefty guy, like Steve Mangori was in Kansas City. So I said, that's fine. I mean, it was so worthwhile because we won a world championship. But, you know, in those days, you could – as a lefty, you could face one hitter and then come out of the game. They made this stupid rule now that you have to face three hitters, which is so ridiculous in upsetting the strategy of the game for a manager. But that's really the way Whitey used me, and it was so much fun being a part of that bullpen. We had Doug Bear and Jeff Lottie from the right side, and then I would come in and face a lefty or two, and then we had Bruce Sutter at the end, and it didn't matter who he faced, right or left, he was probably going to shut the door.
Well, as you know, Jim Cott, we're talking to the Hall of Famer right now, former Cardinal, former Twin, Philly, White Sox, you name it, played for the Yankees as well. And obviously the game is different and it has been changing. And, you know, you were no stranger to throwing 260 innings. A couple times you threw 300, and we always have this debate about pitcher injuries and whether or not they'd be better served throwing more. And a lot of the old-time players say the reason that they get hurt so much is because they're not throwing as much as they used to. How do you see it? Why do you think pitchers are getting injured more and we don't have 300 inning performers? And then furthermore, how did you feel when you were throwing your 299th inning in a given season?
You know, I feel that question's got a lot of parts to it, but the end of it, I mean, I've said before, there are games, I remember throwing 186 pitches in a 13 inning game.
Oh.
The press box counted your pitches. We didn't count them in the dugout. And I had a 9 inning shutout where I threw 81 pitches. But in between there, if I had a game where I pitched like 4 innings and I got roughed up, my arm would feel worse than if I pitched 13 innings, because when you're in that groove, you know, you're in a rhythm, there's very little stress on your arm unless you're trying to throw it 5 miles an hour faster than you're capable of throwing. And that's where we have the injuries, is we have somehow, MLB hasn't been able to do it. They promote velocity. They show it on the screens. Ball gets to home plate. It's actually 5 miles an hour slower than what you see on TV. But they're just encouraging kids to try to throw faster and faster to get a college scholarship. And that's where the damage starts. It may not manifest itself till you get to the big leagues, but a lot of your draft picks now that are being signed are damaged goods already because they've injured their arms early on. The innings thing, I don't know who the genius was that decided that 100 pitches or six innings or whatever, but I think the reason they've had to restrict some pitchers going beyond six innings is because there's so much emphasis on velocity. And in our era, I think the first time through the batting order, we tried to get through that batting order with the lowest number of pitches we could. You know, don't show them everything you have. So we were much more economical, and we weren't superhuman. I mean, I just think we were, like when I was with Jack McKeon the other night, he was talking about when he managed me in Class C ball, 58, I pitched 225 innings in a 120-game season. Well, that's the way we were trained, and unfortunately they're taking the stud pitchers like Paul Skenes and Scooble and Crochet, and they're dumbing them down into six-inning pitchers, and that's, I feel badly for them.
Jim, I wanted to ask you this, and I never had a chance to do it. You know, I grew up in Baltimore, and we were at a game. I'm going to guess my father took me to a game. This had to be about 67 or so. And he said, this pitcher, the Twins? I said, yeah. He said, he's the Brooks Robinson of pitchers. And At first I was like, what does that mean? He said, best fielding pitcher I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And you won 16 gold gloves. And what's amazing about that, you won your first at age 23 and your last at age 38. But why were you so great defensively? I mean, how hard did you work on that? Or did a lot of it come naturally?
Well, this will sound weird, but I learned how to field my position listening to the radio. So as a kid growing up in Michigan, on a Sunday afternoon, I could listen to eight games. You had the Cubs, the White Sox, the Tigers, and then the Braves had just moved to Milwaukee. My dad was a huge Philadelphia Athletics fan. So when the A's were playing the White Sox and the announcer would say, and pitching today is Bobby Shantz, best fielding pitcher in baseball, lands on the balls of his feet, always facing the hitter, like a fifth infielder, ready to go either way. So I'd go in my backyard when I was like 13, bounce that tennis ball off the backyard, make believe off the garage wall, make believe I was Bobby Shantz. My first spring training, the pitching coach after a pitching goes, hey, kid, you look just like Bobby Shantz. I said, well, thank you. Now, here's a cool story. 6 weeks ago, I called Bobby on his 100th birthday. And, you know, he pitched some for the Cardinals, too. But I mimicked my motion after Bobby, and that's what I think helped me. I mean, it doesn't take any particular skill to field your position as a pitcher. It takes anticipation and being in the right position. Now, Bob Gibson was exceptional. He's such a great athlete. He fell off to first base, but he rebounded and got himself in position in case the ball was hit back at him. So that's really what it is, an anticipation and being in the right position.
Well, Bernie mentioned all of your gold gloves, Jim Cott, and some of those will be auctioned off at a live auction with the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory. And a live auction is happening Saturday, and it gets started at 9:30 a.m. our time. And you can find out about it at huntauctions.com. But you've got a lot of memorabilia that you are putting into it, including those gold gloves, the Cardinals World Series trophy from 1982. You've got a lot of stuff you've decided to put in this auction.
Yeah, I think as I looked at my memorabilia, which I've been looking at it for 40 years, obviously I have my Cardinals. That's enough to remind me of the World Series. I have my Hall of Fame ring. I have some other personal items that certainly I will hold on with maybe for my grandsons, but the rest of it was just stuff. And, you know, years ago, I'm talking to go, I put up one of my gold gloves every year for the Bob Allison Ataxia Center dinner from my late teammate Bob Allison, who in fact passed away from ataxia back in the 90s. So I had a guy call in the other day, and he said, yeah, I got one of your gloves back in at that dinner in 1991. So several of them went there, and I still have maybe half a dozen, seven or eight left, the Hall of Fame one. But they're just stuff, and I've had collectors ask for years, you know, when could I get one of your gold gloves? So I just decided to contact Hunt Auctions, which I researched quite diligently, because there are some auction houses out there that have auctioned off some phony stuff. And I was quite impressed with them. I think they did Bobby Orr's. They recently did Willie Mays. So that's what we're going to do. And, you know, there's always a lot of good things you could do with the proceeds. For years, I've been contributing to the Little League program in my hometown. They had a, they have a complex there, three fields named after me. And for, I think, 20-some years, I've provided the balls and bats and equipment for Little League kids, as well as the girls' softball, which is now becoming very popular.
Yeah, and a lot of really cool stuff in this auction. The website is huntauctions.com. As I mentioned, the World Series trophy from 1982, Jim's World Series trophy, some of the Gold Glove awards, a used baseball glove, and then there's some other stuff on top of it, too. You've got a Mickey Mantle jersey, which is there.
I don't think mine is a Mickey Mantle. I have my original Twins jersey.
Yes.
And then I have the glove that I used for 15 years, which is all taped up. With. If I threw it on the street, a kid would pick it up, put it in the trash can. And I have the baseball that knocked my teeth out in 1962.
Oh, wow.
It's still got the imprints in it. I used to have the teeth fragments. I should have put it in a Lucite case. But
that's
a few odds and ends like that. You'd be amazed at some of the stuff that these collectors like to collect. So.
Yep.
They're going to get that chance.
And there's a lot of stuff. Awesome. It is this Saturday, 9:30 in the morning. It gets started. I would encourage you to go to huntauctions.com now and just get the lay of the land. Huntauctions.com. Some of Jim Cott's personal stuff will be there. Jim, the Hall of Famer, we love talking to you. Thank you for visiting with Bernie and me today.
Well, thank you, and thanks for calling attention to the auction. I appreciate that, and it's always good talking baseball with St. Louis people. Thank you.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji, and when Bernie is on the show, it is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. We are getting ready to wrap up here, just about a minute to go before we say goodbye. So, Bernie, as we are heading into the weekend, I know you'll be on Rush Hour Sports tomorrow at 5 o'clock. But prior to then, I know you'll talk about the Blues because they got a couple of games this weekend, both at home, both Friday and Saturday night. And that's a team that just, they got to start stacking wins, man, because this has been a really rough start for them.
They've played better this week, and maybe that's the start of something. Maybe the coach has got their attention. Maybe the boys are embarrassed and a little fired up to try to make amends. We'll see. I don't trust them yet. But there have been some encouraging signs. And the best thing that's happened in recent days is that the fourth line that Jim Montgomery wanted to have this season is finally together, because there were some injuries that prevented that. So now they have that strong fourth line who can play just the way a fourth line needs to play, you know, led by Nathan Walker and Torpchenko and Sundquist. And so I think that's a good thing. They have a foundation there for hard work.
Yep. Flyers tomorrow, and then you've got the Vegas Golden Knights on Saturday. Both of those games at home. Hopefully when we come back on Monday, we're talking about two Blues wins. Bernie Miklas, awesome man. We'll do it again next week on Tuesday. You will be with Rennie not tomorrow at 5 o'clock for Rush Hour. Rush Hour Sports here on KMOX. We appreciate that. It has been Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji. The Dave Glover Show is next. Gas House Gang back tomorrow at noon on KMOX.